Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I am Dave Cushing. Hello, Lynn.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, today we're going to host the monthly art and culture segment with Hadley Dynack of the Park City Summit County Arts Council and Kate McChesney of the Park Silly Sunday Market. And they'll talk about the artists' creativity concerning the Silly Market.
And then we'll host Luke Carton and Celia Peterson. They're from Park City Municipal Sustainability Team. They'll talk about the national movement called the Climate Reality Project and how it relates to air quality. They're giving a talk this evening at the Park City Hospital.
And finally, physical therapists Marlene Hatch and Kathleen Pappy Baker talk about helping athletes return to sport quickly and safely after an injury with effective post-rehab training, bridging the gap between physical therapy and returning to their summer sport.
And it's funny, when we were talking before we came on air about injury, it conjures multiple, myriad stories about people we know, maybe including ourselves, who have injury, who have been injured recently, and trying to get back to sport. So I'm really excited for that.
I've seen some gnarly bruises just in the past week on various torsos.
It is dangerous what we do.
It is.
Extreme life in Park City here. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words from our underwriters.
Spend the day outdoors at Utah Olympic Park and save when you buy a gold pass. Valid for day use of the zip lines, alpine slide, extreme tubing, and much more. Add a Comet bobsled ride for the adventure of a lifetime. Activities are open daily from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Details available at utaholympiclegacy.org.
Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing winter sport and recreation opportunities and a KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with my co-host Dave Cushing. Hey Dave, just wanted to mention before we get into our first guest about the e-bike, electric bike share launch. Today, it's at noon, right here from where we, from our live studio, we can see it at the Old Town Transit Center. That is where one group will be leaving at noon. If you'd like to come by, bring your e-bike, bring your regular bike. We have, there are a certain number of e-bikes within the program that are available to jump on and try. The city council will be riding from there to the McPollin Barn, down all of our wonderful paths. And the Summit County Council will be leaving from the Transit Center in Kimball Junction and riding up the McLeod Creek Trail and various trails from Kimball Junction to meet at the McPollin Barn. They'll be doing a little press event and talking about this great new, it's the first of its kind in the nation.
In the country, yeah. It's amazing. And so it's an electric motored bike rally today.
That's right.
We have 87 new bikes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Stationed around 9 different stations throughout Park City and out to the junction. That would be the sort of outlying area. And it's going to be wonderful. Now, I always love going to cities and doing the bike share, particularly in Boston. They have a Hubway bike share there, and you've probably done it before, but never on e-bikes, because usually these cities are flat.
Correct. And around here, it's really going to help. And it seems pretty affordable, too. And I'm sure if you go to this event today, you'll get the detail on the pricing, because I think there's maybe something advantageous for locals versus tourist pricing.
Yeah, $90 a year for the whole year. So, but more details that I don't know fully, but if you come today or if you come in subsequent days. But today's the first day you can jump on one. So let's move into this month's segment on the connection of arts and culture to our mountain lifestyle. It's curated by the Park City Summit County Arts Council and Hadley Dynack, its director. Today we're going to focus on this concept called creative making. I like it. We'll highlight some of our local creative makers and their stories, along with the ways that our community is incubating these new creative entrepreneurs. Now, these creative enterprises, from chocolate to lobster rolls to T-shirts to toys and shoes are a core part of our local economy and help uniquely define this community. Joining us now in the studio, Hadley Dynack. She's here every month. The director, as I said, of the Park City Summit County Arts Council, along with Kate McChesney, also known as Kate Boyd, of the Park Silly Sunday Market. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning.
Yes, so, I'm incognito a lot of the time. I like all the different last names.
That's right. And mostly people know you as just Kate.
Correct.
So let's talk about, I have to admit, I haven't heard this concept of creative makers before. So Hadley, give us a definition.
Yeah, well, I think it is a concept that is looking at expanding the definition of arts and culture from the wonderful experiences that we have, whether it's performance or music or film, to thinking about all the people that take an entrepreneurial bent to their work. It's the people that are looking at a vision, a creative vision, to produce a product, and they move that vision into reality. So, you know, maker spaces are popping up all over the country. I think over the last, 5 to 10 years, it's been happening. And in our community, we've really seen a number of locals that have moved these ideas into reality. And the Silly Market's been a big part of that. So that's why I wanted to bring Kate in today to talk about, what they're doing and also just their understanding of our local creative maker ecosystem, because it's pretty incredible.
So Kate, you just thought you were in charge of this mega production that happens every Sunday, but you also are fostering and creating a platform for this creative making.
Correct.
And
that's where the passion is, right? Don't get me wrong, we throw an amazing party every Sunday all summer long, but really the passion is watching these businesses have a forum where they can come, set up their booth for very reasonable price. The average artist pays $150 per weekend. And by giving them that forum, they're able to test whether or not their business is viable. And I think with all the changes that we have on Main Street, where we're really looking to not have any chains, if we don't have a place for these people to try out their business and all of a sudden they're put into a $10,000 rent, that could definitely backfire. So by bringing them to Park Silly, by helping them with the advertising, the setup, just with everything that they're selling, making sure that their business is viable, then they can look to be within Park City limits. And we have those businesses that have been successful in that way. But to really, give them that forum. And that's what the partnership with Park City has been over the last, this is our 11th season. So we've watched it happen from day one all the way till now, businesses still popping up here locally or within Summit County or even in Salt Lake.
Yeah, well, you've been involved with it for a while. How have you seen these creative enterprises grow in Park City, and what sort of are the trends in creative making?
Absolutely. So one of the ones that started right out of the gate was Sammy's Bistro. He originally worked for Kevin with Shabu, and Kevin with Shabu had already had a business on Main Street, and so Sammy was one of the helpers, and so he would come down to Park Silly when Kevin was still doing sushi on the street. And the following year, Sammy said, hey, self, I would like to try this on my own, being a really good chef himself. So all of a sudden, the following year, he's doing these amazing fish tacos. And the conversation continually happens with, you should be a brick and mortar, you should be a brick and mortar. And then boom, you've got Sammy's Bistro right there in Prospector, who's now been super successful, ended up not having to come back to the market because he's too busy. And that's trickled. Definitely the food stands out the most. Freshie's Lobster, same thing. They started right here. Short Adore and 24 with their lobster, they're setting up a tent. Then their tent went to a trailer. Then their trailer went to a brick and mortar. And now they're the world's best lobster roll. I mean, are you kidding me? So that's fantastic. And that happened with Freshie's over the past 4 years. Sammy's Bistro was about 6 years ago. And those, I can name, I'll just rattle them off right now. Cade & Co., you talked about little kids' shoes. Cade & Co. started at the market. She's now in the Gateway. Pink Elephant Coffee Roasters started at the farmer's market of ours. Boom, now all of a sudden they're sharing a brick and mortar, which definitely was a great business plan because they can help with that rent. Wild West Jerky started in our farmer's market. Now they're up on Main at Treasure Mountain Inn. Live in Life Park City. They have a brick and mortar on Main Street. They'll still come every weekend to Park Silly because in those shoulder seasons or just to continually get that 15,000 people looking at them, they'll set up a booth as well within the venue. So Este Pizza in Prospector, She used Park Silly last year for the first year, which helped her get through shoulder season because she didn't want to lay off her employees. Whimsy, same thing, right here in Prospector, sets up every Sunday because they don't want to close during shoulder season. They want to make sure that they still have that cash flow. So don't get me wrong, I love throwing a party, but that's my passion. That's what we're about. We have a university at the beginning of the season in May where we invite all of our vendors. We talk it out. They get to meet other vendors. We teach them about setup. I mean, it's so much more, you know, that we're trying to do for everybody than just, don't get me wrong, again, throw a party. Well, a lot of things happening behind the scenes.
And I would add, too, not only is it a pathway or a pipeline for people, but it gives them a chance to prototype their product, right?
Yes.
To see what the response is from the consumer, to talk to their consumer in real time, try new things. So I think that the model of, you know, essentially it's the pop-up market, right, that these makers are having a chance to prototype, to test, to change, and then come back again and ideally grow their business. So yeah, it's fun to hear some of the stories, and I would add, just as in an extension of that, one of the things that the Arts Council did this last year was a 3-day pop-up event called Branded PC, and it was a little different than this incubating market prototype idea. It was really more of a curated gallery space where we invited local creative makers to come and share their product with the community. But we curated that. We set up the space and kind of considered it more of an editorial spotlight. So lots of the individual stories that Kate was just sharing, you know, were the focus of this, because it's not just the products and the business model, but it's also the people, and that's part of our whole community.
3 years ago, back east, before I moved here, the first time I heard of a makerspace was where someone who wanted to get into 3D printing was going to go to find that 3D printer. Do we have makerspace environments here in Summit County?
I can tell you that we just had a Park City High School kid, which we love our youth vendors. He brought a 3D printer to Park Silly. He started with us on June 4th, and he was making 3D, the spinners, those fidget spinners. He's killing it. The kid is killing it. Absolutely. There's another Park City child who is in high school, and he does cold brew coffee. He's actually selling his business to the next Park City high school kid. His business is, quote, unquote, up for sale within the community. And so that another Park City High School kid can try on his entrepreneurial skills and get that cold brew coffee to the next level. It's insane. But yeah, so here you go, 3D printing. He's got the printer on the table. It's all he has, 3D printer on the table and the fidget spinners, and he can make them custom for you, whatever color you want, the ball bearings, how you want it designed, whether it be, you know, the traditional, which is kind of the three loops, or he has one that's triangular.
So not just fostering creativity, but fostering entrepreneurship.
All day.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And is that part of the university that you mentioned that you teach in the beginning of the year?
Correct. We'll invite vendors who started at the market and kind of the transformation of where are they now. And with the market being almost 11 seasons, we've got jewelers that are now featured in Sundance catalog or Nordstrom's, or they've got, you know, businesses that are being accessible all throughout the country. Another one, entrepreneurial Motherlode Canyon. So not Motherlode Canyon, that's the band, but we do promote those as well. Motherlode T-shirt shop.
Right.
They started
on
at the market.
Main Street.
Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, there's a huge T-shirt influx, right? Mm-hmm. But yet they're doing their own screen printing. Two young kids, I think Jesse and Alex are in their 20s. And two young kids, they started at the market. It blew up. They started getting larger orders, not just your typical PC t-shirt, but orders from businesses. I think you've used them. We've used them to, you know, do our own t-shirts. And here they are now, again, another brick and mortar on Main Street. So that they used that as their entrepreneurial forum, and they're just continually, they still come to the market, but they're just continually tweaking their business plan to make sure that, you know, they're going to be viable for Main Street and survive some of these high rents, you know, that kind of stuff.
I want to ask you a little bit about prototyping. And as you see, you know, you talk about the ability of someone to come at a relatively low cost and try out their business model first, try out their product. Hadley, you mentioned prototyping, and I love to hear about the changes, because we know that if you're going to be successful, you need to prototype. What is it? Fail early, fail often.
Fast, yeah.
And to perfect that. So give us a for example, either of you, with the Park Silly, in terms of what you've seen with prototyping and how the product has changed. You know, has Freshies Lobster Roll changed? No doubt it didn't start off like it is right now.
Right. Well, again, and that was kind of the typical, like, they started with a tent, right? And then they found out that they could have a trailer and then
but
boom,
I mean
all
the product.
The product.
The product itself.
Oh, their product's always been amazing. Top Shelf, right? Runs the bartending services. When they started with us, this is their seventh season with us, right? And I'll just use the Bloody Mary bar as an example, because I'm pretty sure we've all seen the Bloody Mary bar grow. Aww. So when we first started, we had, you know, two bartenders behind. And so now it's just, you know, with Casey, he's also promoting, right? And so the bar has expanded. The Bloody Mary, we now have over 75 options. And, you know, and that's Top Shelf and probably one of the most efficient bars I know on Main Street. Mm-hmm. We've got seven wells. We've got guys all over. We've got people on the street. And Top Shelf now has a name within this community where every nonprofit or gala or wedding or private function is using them. And Casey has tweaked his business plan tremendously. He's a graduate of Goldman Sachs Small Business University. He comes to our, you know, comes to our university as well and just talks about it might not be the brick and mortar, but it's really watching your business grow and using, again, Park Silly as a forum. Or exactly what Hadley was talking about. When she had her pop-up over on Kearns, that was really showcasing all of the Park City people. And people don't realize how many great little businesses have come out of this town. You know, Icos, Mike Wong, you know, it blows my mind.
Yeah, and more all the time, which is really, really exciting. I'll say in terms of entrepreneurship and business development, Pando Labs is actually starting to really think about how they can support as an innovation center our creative makers as well as our other startup businesses. And so they're running a peer-to-peer program where entrepreneurs come together every other week for a set section and talk about strategies for business development, prototyping, testing their strategy, et cetera. So resources are starting to develop. And, you know, to your question earlier about other maker spaces, the library has an amazing You Create Lab. We just posted a blog about it on the Park City Summit County Arts Council website last night. Lots of ways that people can come in, and if they're not using technology for their product, they can use those services to develop their materials, you know, their brand, those kinds of things, their stories that they're telling.
Hey, brick and mortar, super important to a town like ours, having businesses actually here to bring people in. What resources are available to help people make the jump to the internet and, elect, you know, e-commerce?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, Pando Labs is one resource that people can go to not only learn best practices, but also learn from other entrepreneurs who are trying this and have tried it in different industries. Because I think right now, you know, we're focusing on those creatives that have taken an idea and made a product out of it. But there's also those entrepreneurs in our community that have built businesses in other ways. So I think their resources are really valuable for people that are trying to make this leap. The next peer-to-peer cohort starts actually this Friday, and it runs through the 15th of September out at Pando Labs on Rasmussen Road. And you can visit their website and give them a call to see what that's about, which is pretty exciting.
Excellent. The connection of art and culture to our mountain town here. And Hadley, I just, before we let you go, have to ask you, we're going to talk about it next month in detail, the dedicated arts and culture district. What was your reaction when it was announced, when you first found out Bonanza Park and the city's endeavor along with Sundance Institute and the Kimball Arts Center?
Yes. Well, when I first learned about it, I think my first reaction was I'd like to stand up and cheer, but I was sitting in a restaurant, so it was a little hard to do that. I think it's incredible. I think that, you know, there's a lot of questions right now about what it exactly is going to look like and, you know, what some of the other spaces are going to be accompanying these two critical anchors. agricultural institutions in our community. But interestingly, tied to our topic, I think there are already a number of creative makers that are housed in brick and mortar spaces in that district. And so in a way that our that district has organically kind of evolved, and you know, the city's commitment to it is really formalizing and taking it the next step. And I'm super excited to talk more with you about it next week. Also want to make a quick plug for next Tuesday. The View From My Door Community Public Art Project is coming to a close, and we're having a large community celebration. This is another example of, you know, our creative voices sharing their stories with each other. And so if you haven't seen the exhibit, it's 13 storefronts in 6 communities, and it's up through Friday. We're taking it down Friday afternoon, and then we're having a big celebration at the Visitors Information Center from 6 to 7:30 on Tuesday.
Tuesday, 6 to 7:30 at the Visitor Center at Kimball Junction.
Correct.
That's by Hugo Coffee.
Exactly.
And that'll be a great party. Kate Boyd McChesney of the Park Silly,
just a silly girl,
Sunday Market, and Hadley Dynack, Park City Summit County Arts Council. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next month.
Thank you both.
We'll talk more.
Stay
with us. It's The Mountain Life. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about Climate Reality Project when we return.
Support of KPCW comes from Zions Bank Family Business Services. Zions Bank, we haven't forgotten who keeps us in business. More information available online at zionsbank.com.
This is Dr. Phil Davidson of Davidson Orthopedics, Park City resident and KPCW fan. Our practice offers solutions for knee and shoulder problems to enjoy the active Park City lifestyle. More information is available on our website at davidsonorthopedics.com.
This is Nanette Bush with Fairway Independent Mortgage, supporter and longtime listener of KPCW. Fairway Independent Mortgage offers personal home, vacation home, and investment property lending. Our mortgage team partners with local realtors to provide our clients with resources to understand the home finance process. Located at 1700 Park Avenue or at nanettebush.com.
Climate Reality Project is a national movement that serves to educate on a variety of topics related to climate change. A handful of local leaders have received training on the science behind climate change, and part of their assignment going forward from the project is to impart their knowledge and pass on the information. This evening at the Park City Hospital, Luke Carton and Celia Peterson from the Environmental Sustainability Team at Park City Mountain
Municipal
Corporation, I'm the new guy, will give a talk on air quality and the health aspects related to our changing climate. Welcome, both of you. What time's the talk?
It's from 6 till 7 tonight at Park City Hospital in the Blair Room.
And that is in the new wing where the conference space is, in the Blair Room. Okay.
Fantastic. And you have been to the Climate Reality Project training, I understand,
indeed,
which was held where? Where did the session you went to?
We were in the capital of Colorado, Denver, Colorado, for it. It was a three-day training. The great thing, too, is Park City was actually recognized for the work we're doing by ex-Vice President Al Gore and also the head of Climate Reality Project, Ken Berlin, as well. So it was great. We went with some of our local electeds, our city manager, and also good representation from Summit County as well, from some nonprofits. And also, so it was awesome. It was really engaging to learn about the latest climate science and also what's happening in the world of energy and that side of it. So
this is heavy on the science, heavy on the research and the data. But you, as I understand, and I've attended one of your talks before, so it's interesting, it's engaging, it's a little bit gloom and doom feeling. But it opens your eyes and you get a lot of the data, which is helpful in an interesting setting. Mm-hmm. Celia, talk about the specific goals of Climate Reality and who are the people that get the training?
Right. So it's activists from around the world that get the training from Climate Reality. In Denver, there were over 1,000 people from all over the world there. So it's quite diverse in people who attend the climate reality, but it's all, everyone there has an interest in climate change and really learning the most up-to-date science of what's going on around the world. And the point is to equip climate activists with the latest science so then they can go out into their own communities, raise awareness, and start engaging people in the fight against climate change.
And I think another key piece to bring up is it's not always just the hardcore science of, you know, 400 ppm and all those pieces. It actually just shows, it helps kind of tie the threads together. Once you start picking up on all the different extreme weather events that really happen on a weekly basis, and to know that all storms are affected now, you know, it's just kind of the dice are totally weighted now. You know, you look at, there's more moisture off of the ocean. You look at the U.S. wildfire season's 103 days longer than it was in the 70s. You know, these are huge, drastic things that you can't really avoid. And then once you start seeing it happening all over the world, it helps piece it together. So it's not just hardcore science and graphs. It's a lot of, you know, just kind of pulls the whole story together to make people understand that this isn't just happening elsewhere. It's happening here. It's happening, you know, repeatedly around the world. It's also leading to a lot of global instability and that side of it as well.
Well, for people who might not be able to make it tonight, are you going to conclude with some takeaways that the average Joe or Jill can implement in their day-to-day lives here in town?
Absolutely.
And in the county?
Absolutely. I think that's only fair. It does. There is a lot of bad news around climate change these days, and I think if the message doesn't come with a message of hope and what we can do in our everyday lives, then we've lost the battle. So I always include what you can do right now, like right after you leave this. So a good example.
Give me the top three things.
Okay, the top three things.
Give us the top three things.
Mm-hmm. I think getting out of your car and riding. So whether you're riding the bus, riding your bike, or walking, that's one big thing, just to reduce the amount of emissions that are coming out of tailpipes. Another is to cut down on the amount of meat that you're eating. So if you switch one day a week and not include meat in your diet, that makes a really big change. It's little things do add up at the end of the day.
Oh.
Do you have the third one, Luke?
Yeah, I think it's participate in the systems change. So the way to view it is you have these individual effects, but you also have the large systematic effects. You know, you can look from the studios here, you can see the Old Town Transit Center, and we have the new electric express running, the e-bikes get launched soon, it's trying to make transit so you don't need a car to get around. It's no longer the concept of, you know, oh, I'm getting punished for this or that. No, the goal is to truthfully make it so you don't need a vehicle to live in Park City, to get around Park City and the greater Park City area. So stay involved. I mean, that's the biggest thing. You know, when Park City did our net zero carbon and renewable energy goals, those were based off of citizen feedback, not the latest climate science. But no, we want to do something. We have to do something. And the great thing is people are actually starting to see these wins kind of stack up. So that's the other thing, too, is participate.
Yeah. You know, we have these little incremental changes. The plastic bag ban, for example, that went into effect a couple weeks ago, and embracing them, each little thing that is done here, and there's a lot. The environmental sustainability team at Park City Municipal is a rockin' team, I have to say, the two of you. You're doing a lot, and you're making these little changes that it's kind of fun to get engaged with. I'm going to jump on one of those e-bikes in an hour and a half or so. To participate. It's all about, as you say, engaging. And, you know, you can fight the plastic bag ban. You can wish for plastic because you forget your bags. But it's kind of fun to just load your whole thing back into the cart and wheel it out to your car without a bag.
Well, I think that's the key thing you hit on, Lane, is it's a balance of, you know, if we shifted our entire grid to 100% renewables, people won't be able to go touch, see, and feel some of these things because it's going to be large scale. Mm-hmm. But you can go ride an e-bike. You know, it's the first e-bike share in the country, which I didn't know, which is a pretty cool fact. Yeah, the plastic bag, people are like, oh, it doesn't matter, it doesn't affect. But it actually has a kind of ripple effect on litter and you know, just kind of the blight of it. So I think it's just, people want to do things. They want to actually feel like, hey, I did something today. And that's our goal, is to try to give folks more outlets to do that and engage them in the process.
Is there, we were talking about this a bit off air, Celia and mm-hmm. I, about when you are offsetting, what your actions might be. For example, you have solar panels on your house mm-hmm. and you say, I'm doing really great here with my carbon footprint. You know, you own an electric vehicle. I'm doing great here with my carbon footprint. And so you kind of let the other things go and you justify your, I don't know, frequent air travel or something that has a heavy impact yeah. on carbon footprint. Talk a little bit, if you would, about how you see people shaping their behavior around that offsetting thing.
Yeah, it was the rebound effect is what we were talking about. So there's this tendency that happens, it's been studied that this happens, when people shift to a more ecologically friendly way of doing something. For example, driving a hybrid car, they do have the tendency to start driving more because they think it's not as harmful anymore. So that's one thing that we really want to prevent, and that's why we're looking things at the more of the systems level on our team. So trying to figure out better ways for people to do their daily activities in a way that if they do more of it, it's even better, rather than kind of just doing a little bit less damage as they're doing their things.
Looking at energy usage in Park City or Summit County, is there a chart or is it known what percentage of energy goes to heating homes versus businesses? What percent of is consumed by transit and getting people around, electricity for your home? And how do you know you're attacking the right area with some of the initiatives that we're engaged in here?
Yeah, so the way that we do that is looking at the CO2 footprint, and we've done that for our municipality for 2016, and that is kind of the all different types of energy get converted to carbon footprint in that sense. And carbon footprinting, that's one of the ways, like first ways that we've put together all of the energy use for different organizations, be it a city, a county, or a company. So that's the way that we do that. And we can see like what pieces of the pie are taken up by, for example, buildings and facilities or transit, moving water around.
And to dive into that a little deeper, so our community-wide footprint will be out probably end of August, early September-ish. We're just wrapping that up now. But on the electricity side, there's actually some really interesting things that Park City is really unique at and not always the best way. So if you think of January, February, and March, you know, town's hopping, you got both ski areas running, all the hotel rooms are full, restaurants are having a grand old time. But in those 3 months, January, February, March, our residential electricity meters use more electricity than all of our business and industrial customers, which is a shocking number to think about. I mean, when you think we have parts of two large ski areas in our city limits, plus all the hotels and restaurants and businesses, to think that the residential electricity use actually spikes higher than what those use combined is shocking. So we're trying to get to the bottom of that. We have some tools in our tool bag where we can try to incentivize. We can adjust some building pieces. But the other thing, the big tool we don't have is we can't write energy code here. So we can't say, hey, if you're going to build this 10,000 square foot house, it needs to be insulated to X level or something like that. We actually can't. We don't have that ability. It's not getting into home rule and all this other stuff. But we just don't. We can't set that at the municipal level. It's set at the state level. The state level, there's been some great moving forward. But to bring it back local, that's why the city is going to adopt a net zero energy standard for all of our city facilities. And what that means is we want to produce as much electricity on site as the annual energy use of that facility. And the goal behind that is to really kind of help spur the movement up here, get the local builders, architects, those folks used to understanding the lingo, the latest science and numbers behind this, to hopefully that'll start rippling out, because we can't make folks become more energy efficient in their homes in certain areas. And you can incentivize, and people say, well, you know, the government shouldn't be pushing energy efficiency on folks. But the flip side of that is when you look at the poles and wires, you know, the electric transmission that comes in and out of here, is if we don't get in front of that, we're going to have to increase that. So that's an impact on everyone that all of the ratepayers have to pay as well. And also on top of that, we are going after 100% renewable electricity community-wide by 2032. We don't have a pathway to get there yet. We're working closely with Salt Lake City, Moab, and Rocky Mountain Power to figure that pathway out as well. And it's actually a six-state way we have to figure it out. So
There's so, this is such a broad topic. And that's why when you go out into the community and give these educational forums and workshops, you sort of focus on one area or another. Tonight at the Park City Hospital, you'll be focusing on the health aspects of climate change. And a lot of this has to do, of course, with air quality, a big topic, well, especially in the Salt Lake Valley. But when you say, Luke, 103 days longer fire season now than in, was it in the 70s?
Yeah, late 70s.
That is incredible to me. And so what this means is huge air quality, lots of particulate matter. So this is one of the things you'll be talking about tonight.
Yes. Yeah, and fire danger is one thing, but there's all sorts of other things. I tend to think about climate change as the planet is like having systemic problems at this point. So if you think about it like a human body, I can think of our addiction to fossil fuels as being addicted to another harmful substance. So it's really in a critical condition right now, but there are things that we can do. We're looking at ways to kind of end our addiction to fossil fuel by electrifying and switching to renewable energy. But there's other parts of the planet that we need to be focusing on as well. But we'll get into that more this evening.
All right. So it's this evening in the Blair Room of the Park City Hospital. That'll be on the, let's see, north end, the east end, northeast end, we'll call it, in the new conference area. And again, what time?
At 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Celia and Luke from the Park City Municipal's Environmental Sustainability Team, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And we'll be back to talk about, ooh, bridging the gap between injury and getting back to your sport with physical therapists from the Park City Hospital when we return. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Dr. Juliana Miller from Miller Orthodontics, a proud supporter of The Local View with Randy Barton. With a combined 45 years of orthodontic experience, my husband and I are now raising our family and working full-time in the Park City community. There are so many reasons to smile in Park City. More information at m2ortho.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak, here with Dave Cushing.
Hey.
All kinds of interesting information this morning from arts and culture and creative makers to climate reality and air quality. And now we're going to talk a little physical therapy. Well, Park City Hospital's physical therapy team is unique among the physical therapy offerings here in the Park City area. And there are a few reasons for that. One is that they are the only show in town that offers certified hand therapists. They also offer this really special bridge program that helps athletes return to sport quickly and safely after an injury. Their physical therapists work with an athlete's physician to ensure proper and effective post-rehab training, bridging that gap between physical therapy and the sport that we always want to get back to so quickly. So joining us now is the director of the clinic, Marlene Hatch, along with Kathleen Pappy-Baker, who's a certified hand therapist. They join us now to talk about some of these offerings. So good morning, and thanks for stopping by the studio, you two.
Good morning.
It's a pleasure.
All right. So we are addicted to our sports here in Park City, and it's a good thing because it keeps us healthy. But on the other hand, sometimes we stay injured. And Dave and I were talking before the show about, you know, injury and what's most important to do to get back to our sport most quickly. And I imagine it lies in evaluating what other muscles you need to strengthen to help that weak portion. I don't know. Marlene, tell us about it.
Correct. So our bridge program is designed just for that. So when people finish physical therapy, they're not 100% better. So the bridge program is designed to take somebody from whatever that level is when they're done with physical therapy and they don't need formal guidance, but they're not back to skiing or cycling or running, and to really bridge that gap so that when they're done with the bridge program, they are 100% ready to participate in their sport, whether it be contact or endurance or whatever the sport is that they're pursuing. The other important thing about returning somebody to sport is really looking at the whole body. So all of our therapists at the hospital are certified in a functional movement assessment. And that is something that we take every patient that's applicable through. It's a screening process where you take people through seven gross movement patterns, and you determine where they're lacking mobility or stability. And these could be something as simple as an overhead deep squat or single leg balance or looking at their trunk rotation. And people who are lacking mobility to perform the movement based on the criteria it takes to be successful at that movement are more prone to injury, or they've been substituting for a long time. So we try to evaluate every person that's going through, regardless if they're a rotator cuff or an ACL, and determine what their limitations are and actually make them better than they were when they walked through the door.
Nice.
When you say substituting, what does that refer to?
So say somebody can't squat to the ground. You have to determine, why can't they get to the ground? Is it because of their hips? Is it because of their ankles? Because of their knees? But most people in this town are pretty athletic, so they're going to find a way to get there regardless. So they might get there through some horrible substitution pattern or taking stress through a different joint and causing injury elsewhere. So we try to pick up on those substitutions so we can correct them so that they don't end up back in our office for another issue.
Right, and getting back to the bridge program, which you say comes in after a round of physical therapy, what does that look like?
So what that looks like is a higher level of exercise. So it's taking somebody from being able to walk normal, go up and down stairs normal, go to the gym and have a pretty good workout, and bridging the gap to maybe playing football. So it's a higher level of agility training, plyometric training, strength training.
This vary by injury and by sport?
Correct.
Right, makes sense.
So I'm going to put you on the spot, Marlene, because I know that you and I have something in common. Well, first of all, we love to ride our bikes. Second of all, you've had a shoulder issue recently. So when you came, you know, when you went through your injury and then you came back, you know, what were some of the things specifically that you worked on, you know, I mean, there are so many muscles connected to your whole shoulder girdle. So did you have to strengthen those? Did you have to make sure they weren't tight? Did you have to stretch? Did you, you know, have to test the stability of those muscles to know if you could even, you know, put your shoulder back on your bike?
Yeah. So interestingly, right, those things aren't supposed to happen to us because I'm a physical therapist, right? But after coming back from a rotator cuff repair, which mine was from lifting and probably from swimming and triathlon, which was not a sport that I was into when I was younger. And as I rehabbed my shoulder, I realized a lot of my insufficiencies actually were in my thoracic spine and my hips. So lack of mobility in my middle of my back and my hips caused me to overuse my shoulders or have too much mobility when I didn't have very much strength. So it's wow. been a learning curve for me as well to get back to the sports that I was doing previous to my rotator cuff repair.
Wow, that's incredible. So your bridge program kind of helped you discover that the changes that you needed to make to maybe your hips or your thoracic spine.
Right, and the functional movement assessment.
Oh, yes. And the functional movement assessment is the thing that you talked about with the gross motor movements.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, let's talk a little bit about hands. Mm-hmm. And again, this is something unique. Certified hand therapist, and Kathleen, that's what you do. And I believe there are one or two others at the the joint.
Yes, we have four. We have four certified hand therapists, and hand therapy is a specialty that you can go into either as a physical therapist or an occupational therapist, and it involves specialized treatment and then. Sitting for a certification exam after 5 years of experience in hand therapy, and then to maintain your certification, it's continuing education and treatment in that area, that specialty area.
Is it a specialty area because there are more bones there than any other place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the hand is very involved, very complicated structure, and I think as hand surgery has evolved over the years, the need for a more specialized follow-up with these patients that the surgeons have been seeing sort of has contributed to the development of our field.
Right. So hand, very complex set of bones. Same with ankle. Not quite as much, but when you add the foot, there's a bunch going down there. Do you have foot therapy?
There isn't really a specialty in terms of certification for ankle therapy, but it is very complicated, and they're very similar structures. And every once in a while, we'll get a doctor requesting us to see an ankle just because it is so similar to the hand.
I went through one of those myself and had an evaluation done because I've had an ankle issue, so that's a personal question. Mm-hmm. What are some of the major things you're seeing during summer months in terms of treatment opportunities and hazards?
During the summer, we see a lot of wrist fractures. We see a lot of tendonitis kind of situations with the wrist and the hand from overuse types of injuries. We always see one of our most common injuries involves the thumb. And then
what happens to the thumb during summer?
During the summer, sometimes the mechanisms of injury can be similar to during the wintertime, as far as like holding on to things and then falling, gripping onto your handlebars of your bike and then falling and torquing the thumb and stressing the ligaments that support the thumb. And so a lot of times we will make therapeutic braces, thermoplastic braces, that help to support the thumb and stabilize the injured ligaments while still allowing you to perform your sport. So sometimes we fabricate these splints and we'll have people bring their bikes in so we can shape the splint to their hand and then place their hand around the handle of their bike while the splint is forming so that they can continue with their sport in a safe manner without re-injuring. So same thing we do in the wintertime with people. Skier's thumb is probably our most common winter injury. And so people will come in with their ski poles and we'll fabricate the thumb splint for them and have them grip their ski poles and then they can get back to the sport in a safe manner.
That's fascinating.
It really is, because I thought that was something that we would all sneak behind our physical therapist back to do. I didn't actually realize, because the number of people that I've seen who still ski and ride their bikes with a brace on, I didn't know that you actually said, this is okay, you can do this. Mm-hmm. But you do.
Yeah, we do.
There's nothing quite like stuffing your thumb into a crusty ski slope. Do you really recover from it 100%?
Yes.
Are you able to? I mean, it just seems like once you've done it, you're always vulnerable.
Well, there's different degrees of injury to the ligaments around the thumb. So depending on how severe the injury is, some people do need surgery to stabilize that ligament and stabilize the thumb. But if it's a lesser degree injury, then a lot of times just splinting the thumb and being consistent with wearing it for 6 weeks can stabilize that injury and allow the ligament to heal. And then, people get back to being 100%. But it's compliance.
Compliance
is the issue.
Oh, well, let's talk a little bit about compliance, because I know for myself personally, I usually go to physical therapy once, and then I tell myself I'm going to do the exercises at home, and then I don't. And then I expect full recovery. So talk about compliance overall with any of your patients. You know, I know it runs the gamut of what you actually need, how many visits, but talk a little bit about compliance and how we can do better.
Well, I think a lot of the compliance lies in the hand of the therapist. I think when a therapist does their initial evaluation, if they're really good at identifying issues that are problematic for the patient, and problematic for them to return to their sport, they're going to be more engaged. And if you can show them how you're going to help them be better or get back quicker or faster, then they're going to be more compliant with what you give them. So I think a lot of it is the educational component and being thorough to evaluate their whole body to see what's really contributing to their issue. Because most people that are active have more than one thing going on. And so identifying those issues, I think, is what the key is to keep them in line. Like I had a patient just last week tell me, I never knew that my knee problem stemmed from my hip. And finally, somebody in your office told me, if you would really pay attention to your hip, your knee is not the issue. And he said he had seen people and had never been told that. And so once it clicked for him. That was the key thing to make him compliant.
Mm. Are there, I mean, part of compliance is remembering to do it and taking time out of your busy day. Are there some phone-based reminder apps or anything you guys know about that would just like buzz you that you could
drop down and give me 20?
Right, exactly.
Right.
Or is that a market opportunity for our incubators here in town?
Yeah. That is definitely a market opportunity. Yeah. I think we're really good at giving you pictures and handouts, and like most therapists, I think Kathleen would agree, we give out our cell phone, our email. But with technology these days, I think we're evolving to those FaceTime visits or the visits mm-hmm. on the internet versus mm-hmm. in person. They're in the development, but we are not currently using those.
Mm-hmm.
And I think another factor, too, is with a lot of insurance plans, people don't have a lot of therapy visits. And so people are more motivated to come in and get a home program and follow through on their own rather than spending a lot of time with us in the clinic.
Yeah. The stories about when you start off a story, I had this one patient that ... I always want the end of the story. So the person with the knee related to the hip, the knee wasn't the problem, the hip was. What kind of exercise? No doubt that person has to do some exercises for the hip.
Correct. So this person is a avid climber, cyclist, skier, and that their knee was tracking inward towards their other knee and hurting. And the person told me, finally, someone pointed out that the weakness was in my hip and not my knee. And so that's how that stemmed, that if I can strengthen my hip, my knee doesn't track inward, my knee feels better. Not even thinking that I have a weak hip because of all the activities I do, skate, skiing especially, because you know how dynamic that is and how much lateral movement there is in skate skiing.
So you're just not doing the right hip exercises,
correct,
right hip strengthening.
Is there a pathway between physical therapy, or what's the pathway between physical therapy, yoga, Pilates, and other of those disciplines?
I'm actually a yoga teacher.
And
so I do incorporate a lot of breathing into my exercises and focus. And I try to incorporate all of those principles into the home programs that I give people to just sort of, again, treat the whole person.
Great.
Okay. And Pilates, too. Pilates is very much a part of physical therapy. We actually have two Pilates instructors in our clinic.
Ooh, good to know. So unfortunately, we're out of time. We could talk to you for another hour, and we'd learn everything we need to know about our bodies, right, Dave?
Except for the prevention part.
Oh, yeah.
Do you guys help people understand how not to get injured?
We do.
Okay. Yes. More on that later.
Yeah,
we'll have you back.
More next time.
Follow up.
But we do, really quickly, can you tell us about the running clinic that you're helping out with next week? You do these on and off running clinics, and it's all about form and function, I suppose.
Right. We are doing a running clinic for Basin Rec's Mountain Mile series, and it's more so based on trail. So the last running clinic we did was based on more so road running, but they are doing a series this year. And so in conjunction with that, we have offered a running clinic for those participants.
Excellent. So July 27th, 5 to 7 p.m., it's $75. Where can you go to find more information, I suppose, to Basin Rec?
You can, or you can call our office, 435-658-7350.
All right.
There's also on our website.
Excellent. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Marlene, Kathleen, thanks for joining us today on The Mountain Life.
It's a pleasure.
So
thank you.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
It's KPCW.